So the two numbers should have some relationship, we expect. So I'm going to quickly now go through some slides. This is basically exactly the same as David's slide in terms of national healthcare expenditure per capita, except I added in a little bit of recession numbers just to try to play out a little bit how the recession might impact on that. This is sort of the percent of GDP growing over time. We've all seen these types of graphs. Here I've done something a little different. I've actually taken health cost, what we call excess health cost growth. Again, I think it's the wrong variable, but let me stick with it for a minute. And what you actually see is that in every post-recessionary period, that number did dip below zero. Every single time. Now you might say, well, that was just the flip side of the economic cycle. In most of these recessions, economic growth started accelerating. In fact, it went above normal, right? As we recovered from the recessions, you might just say the denominator or the GDP growth was the cause of it. And then you might say, well, in this particular case, post-2010, well, that didn't happen, and yet we jumped below zero. But there's other cycles here as well. As I say, it could be the cycles of employers or other people reacting to the fact that now they've got this extraordinary pressure that came out of the recession where health was absorbing everything, and they're reacting. So it's not clear, if you look at it in terms of this types of numbers, whether you can project what's going to go forward in the future is going to continue or not, because at least by this variable, by this calculation, we're doing what we normally do in a post-recessionary period. Okay, so now what have I done? Let me go to the variable that I think is the right variable to look at, or the better variable. There's no right variable. And that's the percent of per capita GDP is absorbed by health growth per capita. And what you can see over the decades, with the exception of 1990 to 2000, and all of us know that roughly 95 to 2000, we had growth in HMOs and PPOs, we had this period of slowdown. So you can see this continual growth. I concentrate, if you will. Do you have a pointer here? I guess we don't. Huh?
Yeah.
The light bar is the per capita number, which is the main one I look at. So you can see this constant growth over time in the percent of per capita income growth that's absorbed by healthcare, again, with the exception of 1990-2000. In the last decade, of course, we didn't have much income growth, so it's not surprising. Healthcare cost absorbed almost all of per capita income growth. In fact, the numbers are, see, I've got them here. I think in that decade, GDP per capita only grew by $2,600, and healthcare costs grew by about $2,300 per capita. So that's how it basically starts absorbing almost everything. So you say, well, when I take it by decade, I haven't quite got the cycles in there, so I've tried it a bunch of different ways. So here's trying to divide it over 20-year periods, except I don't have a projection. This includes the projection going out by the CMS actuaries. This chart shows a continual growth in the share of income growth that's absorbed by health. Of course, again, you can ask the question, well, how much of that is due to the recession? Here's one that sort of does a 20-year period. You still start to see these numbers where basically healthcare is absorbing about 35% of income growth over time, in almost no matter how I do the numbers. So then Uwe's still not here, right? Uwe Reinhardt asked, said, well, gee, you know, you've done this comparison of per capita cost in healthcare with growth in average GDP. How about doing median numbers? And remember, my story on the firm was often that the failing firm or the slow-growing firm also is the one that has this pressure of trying to fight back against this growth. And so here's the growth, if you want to, in per capita healthcare expenses versus per capita income in the median household. And what you can see is an enormous number of years in which health cost growth was in excess of the income growth. And in fact, over that entire period of time, that's the little box up the top, median household income per member grew by about $4,000 over that 30-year period. National healthcare expenditures per capita grew by about $6,000, which has all sorts of implications beyond this conference for how we even measure income or what's happening to the distribution of income. So now let me show you, I'm going to jump slides here and give you a formula. This is the formula that I use to relate excess cost growth as typically measured relative to GDP to what I want to think of as a share of growth per capita that healthcare is absorbing. And there's a relationship there that plays out, and I try to show you in a couple of graphs here, that makes sense. So when health spending's initial share of GDP is 10% of GDP, and GDP growth is 2.5%, there's a direct relationship. So here I'm assuming, in this case, health spending is absorbing 30% of all income growth. What you can see is when health's initial share is 10%, then GDP growth is 2.5%, excess growth is about 5%. Now, just continuing on the same line, that is the share of income growth being 30%, by the time health spending grows to about 18%, you can see that relative to the same GDP growth, taking the lines, you can see that you have this constantly declining relationship between excess costs and the share of GDP. So what this is actually saying is, if I'm right, and let's say healthcare absorbs 30, 40, whatever number you want, percent of income growth, you would expect exactly the type of phenomenon that David was showing you in the earlier slides. You would expect this measure of excess cost growth to go down. And it's an exact mathematical relationship. There's a couple other ways of doing it here. I'll just do one last one. Let's take the case where GDP growth is slow. It's only 1%. Now you can see, now here I'm starting with health spending's initial share of GDP being 18%. So I'm starting essentially where we are today. You can see if GDP growth is 1%, that basically anything, even 1% or beyond of excess cost growth means that health would be absorbing over 100% of the income growth of the economy. And even at 2.5%, you can see, you can see at about 2.5%, even for excess cost growth to be about 1% of GDP, of traditionally measured, health again would be absorbing about 30% of all the per capita growth in income. So I just very much encourage you to think about a different variable, despite the fact that I know a huge amount of the literature focuses on this excess cost growth. I really encourage you to think about what percent of income growth is healthcare absorbing. I really think that's in many cases a better variable on which to be making predictions for the future. And if I'm right, and that approaches some constancy, then we would expect mathematically that as the initial share of health spending grows from 10% to 15% to 18%, whatever, to 20% of GDP, you expect the excess cost growth by this traditional measure to decline over time, purely because of this type of mathematical relationship. And I think most people recognize this. If healthcare is 100% of GDP, we know the excess cost growth can't be any more than GDP growth. And so you understand it implicitly there. But this actually carries it out further. So where do I come out bottom line and where's going? As I say, I see these two forces working against each other. I see this irresistible force that we have to deal with, which is this original sin of health policy still being a major reason why most health economists still believe that there's going to be this excess cost growth, or why healthcare is going to continue to absorb a substantial share of the income growth of the economy. I see as that share of GDP grows, that reaction of the various sectors, including the federal government, which we may want to start treating as endogenous rather than exogenous to this process, is going to react more and more. So we would expect, in point of fact, that the excess growth would decline. And as I say, if you focus on the variable I think it's more important, you focus on the share of income that health is taking, that also gives you an argument for why you would expect that traditional measure of excess cost growth to decline, even if the share of income growth absorbed by healthcare is not, the additional share of income growth absorbed by healthcare is not declining at all. Thank you.
Okay, so I represent the 12%. And I know there are more of you out there. You just didn't want to admit it. So I think it's a little early to be declaring victory. One of the obvious stubborn fact that has dominated health policy for the past four decades at least is that health spending has outpaced economic growth by 2 to 3 percentage points on a per capita basis. It's interesting. Dick Nixon, one of our greatest presidents, in pushing for wage and price controls, condemned skyrocketing healthcare costs as the reason why the government had to control costs. It didn't work then, but of course it wasn't applied with full vigor, I guess. In any event, obviously, excess cost growth, or whatever you want to measure, is potentially a problem. I mean, I think, well, I got something to say about Gene's slide here in a minute. So, you know, one of the things that David's slides and Gene's slides demonstrate is that if you torture the data long enough, and this is an important economic principle, it will confess. Ronald Kosa, a great economist. And so, you know, what are we talking about here? This is the simple version of the picture. This is what everybody's excited about. And of course, the question is, did we turn the corner in 2002? But the better question is, if there really is a slowdown, is it going to be permanent? When the economy fully recovers, will health spending revive as well or not? That's the question. Now, as you can see, we don't have a lot of data points here. And behind the data points, we really don't have a lot of very relevant pieces of information to explain those data points either. So that's one of the reasons for my skepticism. But here's a version of what I think Gene was trying to say that may make the point in a less analytic way, but still makes that point that growth rates don't tell you a lot about what's going on. So you can see that obviously with the introduction of Medicare, growth rates rose, and then right after that, because Medicare put a big lump of spending into the economy, essentially, growth rates inevitably drifted down, and throughout the 70s and I would say much of the 80s, health spending growth rates. This is on a per capita basis? I'm not sure. This is actually a chart that I think David provided the Wall Street Journal last year. So I don't remember whether this is per capita or not. But be that as it may, this version of growth rates didn't rise very much. There was kind of basically on average about 5% during the 70s. Mid-70s to mid-80s, and then moved up a bit. And then you see the pattern. That's the pattern you're familiar with. Obviously, the introduction of Medicare substantially increased the share of national health spending relative to GDP from 5.2% to 7.2%. That's to be expected. But when you look at the decade of the 2000s, you see that even though growth rates were low, the share of GDP went up. As Gene said, it's related to a weak economy. So looking at growth rates and looking at the share of real resources used by the economy, there's a relationship there, but it's not a clear, obvious relationship. It's not something that I think policymakers should take great heart in. Okay, so now, is it cyclical or structural? One of the points that I think is worth remembering is that some things that we think are structural changes don't last. And a great example of that was the managed care miracle in the 90s, in the early 90s. As we all remember, managed care plans, whether they were really managed care plans or just plans that limited access to various kinds of services, but whatever you called them, they were the rage, especially among employers in the early 90s. Medicare caught on to this idea about the same time that managed care, or that form of managed care, was phasing out. And why did it phase out? Well, the answer is obvious. The economy was coming back very strong. Employers were concerned about losing good employees to their competitors. And so the last thing they wanted was unnecessary complaints from their good employees. I mean, the idea of having to call somebody to get permission to be admitted to the hospital, which was one of the standard practices of plans that were called managed care plans at that time, that never made a lot of sense. People generally didn't want to get admitted to the hospital because the food was good. So the question is, how much of what people now are pointing to as structural changes, how much of this is going to last? This point about cyclical versus structural, I think, is a very important point. David's paper estimates that about 30